air and naval forces of the United States launched a series of strikes against terrorist facilities.
Homeland.
He has sanctioned acts of terror in Africa.
Claire Danes, Damian Lewis, Morena Baccarin, David Harewood, Diego Plattenhoff, Jamie Sheridan.
This was an act of terrorism. It was a despicable and cowardly act.
David Marciano, Navid Negaban, Jackson Pace, Morgan Saylor, and Mandy Patinkin. Rainy black and white images of the World Trade Center burning.
We must and we will remain vigilant at home and abroad.
A sign for the George Bush Center for Intelligence.
I missed something once before. I can't.
It was 10 years ago.
Everyone missed something that day.
Everyone's not me.
Carrie listens on headphones. Brody looks out at Capitol Hill. A helicopter flies overhead.
Previously on Homeland.
Brody shoots Walker.
I'm on to Brody. He knows something about Walker's death, and he's covering.
Let's have some fun.
Yeah!
Finn runs over a pedestrian.
See, she's fine, Dana, okay? He's calling 911. There's nothing we can do about it.
Okay.
My name is Nicholas Brody. People will say that I was turned into a terrorist. My actions this day...
I would try to...
...is against...
You're a disgrace to your nation, Sergeant Nicholas Brody. You're a traitor and a terrorist, and now it's time you pay for that.
When's the attack? Talk, you motherfucker!
Get the fuck off of me!
I can do this, Saul. It's my turn.
Carrie holds Brody's hand.
What is Abenuzier's plan?
I don't know.
But there is a plan, right?
Yes.
Who does know the plan?
Nicholas, we're at war. You need to choose sides.
I need the truth, Brody. No more secrets.
You're gonna think this is a little crazy, Jess. I'm working for the CIA.
An agent in silhouette sits at a bank of split-screen monitors, showing feeds from CCTV cameras positioned around the city. Capitol Hill gives way to a traffic jam, then a pedestrianized area where Roya is walking past a fountain. In the surveillance room, Carrie and Peter are following Roya's progress closely. Wearing a black suit with a white trim around the lapels, Roya crosses a road in the sunshine and tucks her long dark hair behind her ear. The streets are bustling with people. Standing with her arms folded, Carrie studies the journalists' movements across different camera feeds. Roya wanders up to a newsstand, then slows down and stops.
Why is she stopping? She knows she's being followed.
I don't think so. It looks like she's just clearing the area.
Roya looks to the side.
She's on the air in half an hour. She's going somewhere.
Going somewhere? Bold prediction.
I mean meeting someone now.
After pretending to browse the newsstand, Roya turns to go.
Okay, she's moving.
Blue one in pursuit.
An agent in a suit tails her. Carrie zooms in on a satellite view.
Towards Garfield Plaza, it looks like. Virgil, heads up. She'll be coming to you.
I'm on it.
We're redeploying.
Blue 1, take up position, Pennsylvania Avenue. Blue 2,
southeast corner and stand by.
A dark saloon pulls away.
Virgil, Max, get on her.
Copy.
Okay, Max, she's passed. You can open your eyes now. Max, wake the fuck up, will you?
What?
We're on.
Oh, where's...
Oh, and if it's not too much trouble, bring your damn mic.
You got it.
Okay.
Max climbs out of the surveillance car.
That's pretty wide open. Anyone with a camera is going to be pretty hard to miss.
It's a public plaza. There'll be security cams everywhere. Galvez?
Yeah, got it.
As Roy is passing through the crowd, Max and Virgil are crossing a nearby road. Carrie points to a large fountain on the monitor.
Here's where she'll be going. I mean, she's a public figure. She has to accept that she might be seen, but she won't want to be heard.
Max and Virgil pretend to rest by a lamppost. They spy Roya approaching a dark-haired man in sunglasses by the fountain. The man stands up and embraces her.
Where's audio? We gotta get ears on this.
Gotta move closer.
Max wanders off towards the couple with his mic.
Virgil, it sounds like Niagara Falls.
Max takes a seat about 20 feet away from the pair.
You recognize him?
No. Gavis?
Yeah, facial recognition won't work, not with those glasses.
This is it. This is the meet we've been waiting for. Virgil, where the hell is Max? We need to hear this.
Max is leaning on a table, his arm resting on his discreetly hidden microphone.
Can you clean this up?
I'm trying.
Are you recording? We gotta get this.
Carried.
As the audio is streamed through a computer, Galvez doesn't look hopeful.
Damn it!
Roya finishes talking to the man and walks away.
We've got nothing.
On the monitor, the man saunters away as well.
Okay, Blue 1, Blue 2, do not let that man out of your sight.
Virgil!
I got him.
Dressed casually in a blue checked shirt, Roya's contact looks at his watch, then strolls around a corner. A few moments behind him, Virgil jogs to keep on his tail. Peter glances nervously at Carrie, who's studying security camera feeds from inside a subway station. As the man in the sunglasses comes down the steps into the station, Carrie follows him on her monitor. A few seconds later, Virgil comes down the steps as well. As different views of the station play out on other monitors, Carrie and Peter keep their attention fixed on the one with Virgil, who pauses for a second at the bottom of the stairs before disappearing off the side of the frame.
What the hell is going on? Virgil!
They spot Virgil on a staircase. Roya's contact has vanished.
We just lost him.
Frustrated, Carrie runs her hand through her long blonde hair, then turns away from the monitors to look at the case board. Jessica brings Brody a glass of water and some tablets in bed.
How's your hand? Here. Every 4 hours.
He takes the tablets and water from her with his good hand, then props himself up to swallow them.
Glad you're back.
You are?
Yes. But I have, like, a million questions about the CIA thing. 50 million.
Jessica.
I know. Can't talk about it.
I'm not supposed to have told you I was even involved with them at all.
He gives her a sympathetic smile.
What do you want to know? Ask me anything. I'll tell you if I possibly can.
No, it's nothing. It's late. Dana's not even up yet. Dana! Come on, it's almost 7:30. You're gonna be late. Come on.
I'm sick.
Since when? You feel fine.
I'm not.
Come on, up. Let's go.
When Jessica whips back the bedclothes and leaves, Dana quickly pulls them back. As she lies there, thinking, a look of dread creeps across her face. Galvez.
There he is, exiting the Meridian Hill station a few minutes later.
without the sunglasses. No match for facial recognition, though.
Great, so we don't know where he is or who he is. Did you try her classmates at Oxford?
Yeah.
Co-workers from the TV station in Yemen?
Yep. And everyone else related to everything we know about her. Try them all. No match anywhere.
I'll keep trying.
Peter goes over to Carrie and Virgil.
We got a clean picture. We can see the motherfucker clearly. Still no ID.
And no sound.
It's as good as it gets.
You know what we need to do. Bring Brody in, see if he can identify the guy.
Think that's a good idea, letting Brody in on this?
He already knows more than enough to sink us. If he wants to take stuff to the other side, he already can. Look, the only reason we even knew to follow Roya is Brody. The only reason we saw her meet that man, whoever he is Brody.
Okay.
We made a deal with him. It's in his best interest to help us.
I said, okay. Bring Brody in, but don't trust him. That's all I'm saying.
Brody shrugs on his suit jacket as he makes his way into the kitchen, where Jessica is spreading jam on a slice of toast.
She moving?
Didn't look like.
Dana!
Where's Chris?
He had early practice. That's an hour ago.
Dana!
I'm coming!
There's something going on with her, Brody. I don't like it. Brody.
Huh?
What is it?
Landley wants me. Hey, really, see for yourself. Take a look.
She declines.
Jess? I'm not saying I'm deserving of your trust, not at all.
Who are you working with? You asked me what I wanted to know. That's it. Who are you working with at the CIA? Is it her again? Carrie?
No.
The nut?
No. I told you she had a nervous breakdown. They kicked her out. She's not even at the CIA anymore.
Dana comes in, dressed for school.
I have to go to school. I'm gonna need a ride.
Brody gives Jessica a kiss.
Come on, sleepy.
Jessica gives the toast to Dana, who then follows Brody out. Now in the car, Brody notices a dark red saloon behind him, then adjusts his rearview mirror. A preoccupied Dana takes a half-hearted nibble of her toast.
No good?
Just not hungry.
You okay?
Yeah. I'm fine.
As he turns into the school, Brody looks over his shoulder and sees the dark red car driving on.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Stop, Dad. Let me out.
Brody pulls over.
Thanks for the ride.
As Dana climbs out, Brody notices that the dark red car has parked nearby and closes his eyes in dread. Driving away, he gives Finn a wave, then watches in his rearview mirror as Dana joins Finn, then the two of them fall into step together. Dana and Finn are walking across the school grounds.
You're tired?
Yeah, so I've heard.
Just take it easy.
Sure, after we hit someone with your car, just take it easy?
It's gonna be okay.
You don't know that.
Yes, I do. Someone called 911. We saw that. There's a hospital a couple miles away. An ambulance would have gotten her there in like 10 minutes max. She's gonna be fine. Okay?
Yeah.
Well, school's about to start. I got an AP history test first period.
I think that I'm gonna just take it easy. a minute.
Okay. Yeah. See you at lunch then.
A security camera looks down on Brody as he arrives at a door.
He's here.
Peter looks over at Carrie.
I'll get him.
She opens the door of the surveillance room, then lets Brody in.
Hey. You texted for me to come here?
Yeah. How are you?
Not too bad, actually. Taking a lot of painkillers for the hole in my hand. Is he here?
Yeah.
Quinn?
Did it go all right when you got home?
Yeah, I think so. I told Jessica I was working for the CIA. She seemed to believe me. Asked if you were involved. I said no.
Okay.
So, what am I doing here?
The deal we talked about. You helping us get Avenue Zero in exchange for immunity. If you're still willing, it starts now. I'll help you through it.
What do you want me to do?
We're hoping you can identify someone in a photo.
That's it?
For the moment, yeah. I mean, generally won't be this easy, but for now, that's what we need.
Never seen him before.
You're sure?
Yeah. By the way, I don't appreciate having a car in my tail when I'm driving my daughter to school.
A lot of things about this arrangement are far from ideal.
Taking away the photo of Roya's contact, Carrie leaves Brody sitting awkwardly at the table, with Peter standing over him. Brody looks over his shoulder and sees her pinning the picture back onto the caseboard. Then they hold each other's gaze across the room for a lingering moment. Peter notices. Brody turns away again. He seems to have something on his mind.
You know what? I think I should get going. I have a busy day ahead of me.
You're absolutely sure. You're absolutely sure that you don't know anything that could help us.
Yeah, like I said, I've never seen him before.
That's not what I asked, though, is it?
I don't know anything about him.
But you know something.
Brody.
Carrie fixes Brody with an intense stare. Then he turns away and thinks. He glances towards Peter, then gets up and crosses the surveillance room to the caseboard, where Carrie is still standing. He unpins a photograph of Basil and shows it to her.
I told you about this guy, the tailor from Gettysburg who made my suicide vest.
Yeah, we still can't find him.
You're not gonna.
He pins it to the deadboard.
He's dead. Roya asked me to move him on the day of that fundraiser I missed. I was supposed to take him to a safe house, and he died on the way.
He died?
Yeah, it was an accident.
Yeah?
Yeah. He thought I was trying to kill him, and he bolted and he fell.
I've got a 6-man surveillance team round the clock watching a storefront in Gettysburg, waiting for somebody that you couldn't be bothered to tell us is never coming back.
I didn't know you were watching a storefront. You never tell me anything.
The deal is full fucking disclosure, not pick and choose what you say.
Wait here.
Carrie leads Peter into an anteroom to speak in private.
No, it's my fault. I never pressed him in the debrief.
Yeah, I wonder why that was.
What's that supposed to mean?
I don't know, Carrie. In the interrogation room, you said you wanted him to leave his wife and run away with you?
And you put a knife through his hand. The difference being what I did worked. So don't worry about my objectivity. Worry about your own. At least we know now that the tailor's not coming back. We can lose our surveillance, go in and search the shop finally. Maybe find something.
I'll put a forensics team together and take him to Gettysburg.
Thank you.
About to step back into the main room, she notices Brody holding his head in his hands and turns back to Peter.
The tailor's dead. He handled their munitions. If this new guy turns out to be his replacement, we need a line on him fast. We need to run Brody back to Roya. Have him try and get something out of her about the guy's identity.
Yeah, good luck with that. Take a look at him. The guy's a fucking mess.
I think he's all we've got.
Fine. You call. But Gary...
Don't trust him. Yeah, you said.
Mike, Loder, and another man enter a dark, dank tunnel.
So you're a Marine?
I am. Shocks me, too.
With Tom Walker?
Yep. And Mikey here.
So do you know what happened? Did you make him crack?
I have a few theories on that subject, yes?
Actually, like I said on the phone,
Detective,
we were hoping that he could give us some facts about how he died.
Well, I found him here. Homeless guy heard a gunshot, alerted a patrol officer who called homicide. He was lying, head there. Single bullet right between the eyes, point blank more or less. Blood spatter, there, you probably can't see anything now. Single 9mm casing on the ground right there.
9mm. Standard military issue.
Standard everything issue.
Sure. You know what I'm thinking?
No, Lauder, what are you thinking?
This place? Not exactly public. I wouldn't step foot in here at night except with someone I knew and trusted.
So can we see your report?
Report? That's all you knew. The 20 minutes the CIA swooped in and shut us down.
CIA. Wonder what elected official they are covering up for.
Lauder.
What national figure?
Shut up.
Maybe I'll give you to a moment.
What was our deal?
No mentioning Brody.
Well, don't pretend you're not thinking he's suspect number one. You're a military intelligence officer. There must be some way you can find out what happened.
Yeah, I might know a guy.
You might know a guy. That's fucking rousing,
Look,
man.
That's the CIA. All right, but he's not going to give me any classified information. You might just nod if we're on the right track, though. Okay?
Loder nods. Then he hobbles on his crutches out of the tunnel with Mike. Still in her school uniform, Dana is walking tentatively through a hospital. Arriving at the ICU, which has a sign saying authorized personnel only, she's about to approach it when the doors spring open from the other side and she quickly hides. A team of medical staff wheels a patient out on a gurney. Keeping her back pressed against the wall, Dana waits till they've passed. Then, when the coast's clear, she slips through the double doors just before they automatically close. With her bag slung over her shoulder, she proceeds cautiously into the unit, her head turning from side to side as she takes in her new surroundings. She passes a room where the patient is shrouded in darkness. She spots a whiteboard and goes to take a closer look. It shows a list of five or so patients' names together with room numbers. Dana reads them, none the wiser. Looking about, a flicker of recognition crosses her face, and she approaches a room where the female patient is lying hooked up to life support. Someone comes up behind her.
Do I know you? No. Sorry. Do you know my mother? No. I was looking for someone else. Will she be okay? Your mom? They don't know. She was doing okay. And a few hours ago, a clock kicked loose in her head. Some idiots hit her in a car and took off. So, which one's yours?
Dina frowns, confused.
Who are you visiting?
I'm not.
You said you were looking for someone.
My dad, he's a doctor. He's a cardiologist.
A doctor? You're lucky.
I didn't know him when I was little. And he wasn't around.
The nurse? She said call her priest.
The priest and a woman arrive and enter the room. Then the daughter follows them in. Dana's left standing on the outside. Looking into the room with mounting panic, Dana's breathing becomes shallow and she flees. When she presses the button to exit, the doors remain closed, so she hits it repeatedly. The daughter hears her from the room. The doors eventually part, allowing her to hurry out. Dana goes to the lift and stabs the button impatiently until it arrives. She dashes inside, presses her floor, then the doors close on her worried face. The dome of Capitol Hill rises up from the city at night. In the dark, deserted surveillance room, Carrie studying the active leads on the case board with her feet up on a chair. Saul comes in.
It's late.
I'm just gathering my thoughts. We're gonna hit Brody tomorrow about approaching Roya.
So I heard. Also heard it got a little nasty with Quinn today.
Yeah, well, in my opinion, it starts nasty with that guy, but whatever. Wait, is that why you're here?
I just want to make sure you're good.
He said not to trust Brody, Saul.
He's right.
Yeah, well, if you'll remember, I'm the one who came up with that theory back when everyone else was calling him the patriot of the century. You don't know what it's like.
What?
Having everyone assume you're at your worst, like you can't see straight.
No one thinks that.
Really?
I don't. Not at all. I do worry about you being so close to Brody again.
It's not like before, Saul.
Good.
I saw his suicide tape. My eyes are open. How could they not be?
That's all I wanted to hear.
Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Two dark saloons sweep over a level crossing, then pull up outside Basil's tailor shop, where a uniformed officer is standing guard. As an agent comes outside, pulling off rubber gloves, Peter climbs out of one of the cars.
All clear.
Galvez and a forensics team follow Peter inside, into a workroom with shelves of material on rolls.
Make sure the evidence response team has whatever support they need and crack the whip, huh? We should have been here weeks ago. All right, everybody, we're looking for names of contacts, material suppliers, anything out of the ordinary.
If you have a question, ask. No detail is too small. You?
Chapman, sir.
You and you, come with me.
Peter takes the two agents into an interconnecting room.
Start here.
Leaving the forensics guy to get to work, Peter leads Chapman into the old-fashioned front of shop, where mannequins in suits stand between racks of clothes. Peter looks cautiously out of the front windows.
Small town, likely to be some theorizing about our presence here, so any looky-loos drop by, wondering what we're up to, tell them,
What?
Sales tax audit.
Using a paper tissue to keep off their fingerprints, he passes Chapman a clipboard, then heads back through the room where the forensics team are busy sifting through potential evidence. In an underground car park, Brody pulls into his parking space in his SUV. He looks at the US House of Representatives plaque, which says, "Reserved for Congressman Nicholas Brody," then sighs. As he lets his head fall back onto the rest, Carrie suddenly appears.
Greg said you had a committee meeting at 10. I thought I'd grab you beforehand.
What do you want?
The photo we showed you yesterday.
I told you, I don't know who the guy is.
I know.
Well, it's the truth.
I believe you. But his appearance here means whatever Nazir has planned is happening now, and that guy is a part of it. We can't ID him in any of our databases. We need your help. Roy has an interview with Congressman Mackey at noon today in this building.
Well, I can't just walk up to her and ask her who the guy is.
I know.
You know, she tells me what to do. That's how this works.
You told her we've been seeing each other, right?
Told her we've been fucking, yeah.
Okay, good. So tell her you were at my place. You overheard me talking on the phone about a Hezbollah operative who recently entered the country.
Is that who he is, Hezbollah?
Sir, guess.
What if it's wrong?
It shouldn't be a problem. It
shouldn't.
Brody, this is how it works. You put out a little feeler, you see what comes back. Just don't push it and you'll be fine. Okay?
She places her hand on his shoulder.
You asked me to approach Voya. I say it's a bad idea. Then you do this. For what? What is this? Sex? Understanding? If that doesn't work, then what? You remind me of the deal that we made? How much it hurts you're even bringing it up? How my entire family will be destroyed if you're forced to tell them the truth?
Brody.
Don't worry. I'll talk to her for you.
The new phone I gave you? Have it on you.
With a hollow laugh, he walks off across the car park, and Carrie turns away with a heavy sigh. Saul steps out of a lift at Langley.
Mike Faber?
Yes.
Saul Behrens. I understand you had some questions about the investigation of Tom Walker's death a year ago.
Yeah, I'm meeting a friend of mine here, Glenn Peterson.
Glenn passed a request for information on to me. This way.
Saul leads Mike down a corridor to an office, then opens the door.
Okay, do you want to tell me what's going on?
Please.
Mike steps into the office, then hesitates when he sees David Estes standing waiting for him.
Sit.
Mike takes a seat next to another military officer.
We spoke once before, you and I. I remember. It was right after Brody got back. You strong-armed me into getting him to enlist.
What I did was discuss with you what was best for Sergeant Brody and his family and for this country, which is what we need to talk about again. I'm told you've been making inquiries into Thomas Walker's death.
I have a few questions, yeah, but I don't need a GS-15 to answer them.
I'm afraid I don't have any answers for you, Major.
I'm surprised. Homicide cop told me that the CIA took over the investigation.
Oh, we did. And nothing yet.
So, in other words, sir, I'm being stonewalled.
Well, I wouldn't use those words.
Do you know who killed Tom Walker?
No.
Because I'm thinking it was a co-conspirator.
Major, you're being told by fellow intelligence officers, respectfully at this point, not to pursue your unauthorized freelance investigation into a matter of national security. Nod your head if you understand.
Mike sits back in the chair, then after a moment, nods. Brody meets Roya at a security checkpoint.
Roya!
Carrie's watching them from the surveillance room.
I hope this is congressional business.
Nope.
And follow protocol. I'll contact you.
I got something I think you should know.
Okay, here we go.
I was at Carrie Matheson's apartment last night. She got a phone call. Late. Heard her talking about some person just landed in the country. Hezbollah, she said.
Who called her?
I don't know.
But you're sure she said Hezbollah?
No. It's a pretty I just thought you'd want to hear.
I do. Thank you. What happened to your hand?
No, home improvement. Hurts like a motherfucker.
A guy standing nearby with his phone.
Okay, Virgil, what happened to our audio? We lost audio.
No, they're just not talking.
Well, fucking say something, Brody. Say something.
You're just worried about that guy back there.
The guy moves on.
FBI forensics went into the tailor shop.
After sitting on it for 2 weeks, they finally went in today. Any idea why?
No. Will they find anything?
They might.
As Voya walks away, Carrie frowns at the monitor, thinking. The feed shows Brody turning to watch Voya leave. Dana goes up to Finn at his locker.
Dana, what the fuck?
You've been avoiding me.
I'm not avoiding anyone. I'm standing in the middle of the hall.
She wasn't all right, Finn. She was dying.
What?
She died in the middle of the night.
Looking shocked, Finn turns and starts walking through the school.
Can't talk about this, Dana.
Not here, okay? Where?
Nowhere. We can't talk about it anywhere.
We have to tell someone.
No, we don't. We agreed to stay quiet.
Yeah, that was before she died.
It's even more important now.
Finn, I met her daughter.
You what?
At the hospital. She's all alone now.
You went to the hospital? Are you crazy? What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? What the fuck is wrong? Jesus. Your dad is a congressman. Mine is going to be president.
Yeah, and her mom is dead. She needs our help.
No, I do, all right? I need our help. I was driving, not you. This comes down on me. And swear to God, I'd rather die than have my father find out. If you say anything about this, I'm dead. I mean it.
He brushes past her and leaves her standing. At Basil's tailor's shop, the forensics team is continuing to search for evidence. Galvez puts down a box, then joins Peter in the workshop.
Anything? Doesn't seem like it. Not yet.
Peter answers his phone.
Yeah, Carrie.
Brody just talked to Roya.
Yeah, how'd that go?
I'm not quite sure.
She knows you're at Gettysburg.
She does? How?
Maybe they're watching. I don't know.
She said there's something there. Have you found anything?
A lot of cigarette butts.
Damn receipts. Seems the guy was quite a record keeper. I got six guys going through it all.
Yeah, I don't think she was talking about receipts. I think it's something bigger.
Like what?
I don't know.
Well, what did she say?
It wasn't what she said exactly. It was
another one of your hunches?
Just
keep my eyes open. Thanks. Alves?
Yeah.
Call for reinforcement. I want to back up here.
Peter seems more on his guard. Chris is watching Mike search the Brody's garage.
So, what is it that you're looking for exactly?
Something I lent your dad.
Good luck finding it. Mom said it's like the wreck of the Hesperus in here. Which I don't really get what that is.
The Hesperus? It's a ship that sank a long time ago, but some guy, he wrote a poem about it. Hey, Chris, do me a favor. Go into the kitchen and grab a flashlight. It's a little dark back here.
Okay.
As soon as Chris is gone, Mike takes out a black metal box, which he puts on the workbench and unlocks. Inside, under a cloth, is Brody's 9mm handgun and a box of ammo. Mike opens the box and finds that one of the 50 bullets inside is missing. He looks up with a pensive frown. At the tailor's, Peter is staring thoughtfully at a far wall. In front of it, a rail of clothes has been left under a strip light. Peter walks slowly towards the wall, touches the surface, then gently taps across it to see if it's hollow. He's interrupted by Galvez.
Sir, we've got a FBI SWAT coming. They're about an hour out. State troopers will be here sooner.
Good.
Can I ask you what this is about?
Peter hears the shop door and draws his gun. Suddenly, in the front shop, a SWAT team opens fire with machine guns. They shoot at the feds, then systematically advance through the back shop, executing anyone in their path. Galvez returns fire, then ducks between two desks, but he's shot repeatedly in the back as he tries to clean. The floor is now littered with the bodies of agents, and there's blood splashed across the walls. The gunmen, who are dressed in black helmets, dark clothing, and bulletproof vests, tip over a desk to get to the wall Peter was examining moments before. One of them steps to the side and pulls off his helmet and mask. It's the man Roya met by the fountain. He touches a graze on his cheek, then returns to his two colleagues, who are busy cutting a hole through the far wall. Once a rectangle has been cut into the plasterboard, they rip it out to reveal a secret cavity behind. From inside, they pull out a large black metal trunk, which is so heavy it takes both of them to carry it. Roya's contact lifts a shot colleague onto his shoulder and carries him out, followed by the men with the trunk. They pass Peter, who's lying on his back on the floor, blood trickling from his mouth, and his eyes staring blankly ahead. As soon as the gunmen have gone, Peter blinks and takes a breath. In agony, he struggles to sit up and holds a bloody gunshot wound on his side. Mike's waiting in the kitchen when Jessica arrives home.
Mike, what brings you here?
You needed to borrow something from Dad.
Right. Can I talk to you a second?
She half looks towards Chris, who's playing a console game, before leading Mike into the dining room for a quiet word.
What is it?
You know I care about you, right?
Of course.
No, not of course. I mean I care about you. I'm not sure I should tell you this, but I think you need to know.
What? What is it?
Lauder came over here the other day, making accusations about Brody.
He was drunk.
Drunk, yeah, but not wrong. See, I've been looking into some stuff the past couple weeks.
What stuff?
Who killed Tom Walker? It was Brody, Jess.
No.
Yes, it was. I just checked his ammunition in the garage. I know this is hard to hear. It's hard to say. He hasn't been okay since he got back, and I'm worried about you, about the kids, because I love you, and he's not getting better.
I know. I know he's not who he was. But he's working for the CIA.
What?
He told me, Mike. He swore it was the truth.
It's not that simple. Whatever he said, there's got to be some kind of a cover-up.
I really think you should go.
I'm just trying to look out for you.
I know. But don't. Please. We're doing the best we can here. Just go.
Looking disappointed, Mike turns to leave. Jessica rubs her tense face, then watches as Mike pats Chris on the back of the head on his way out. Carrie marches along a white marble corridor lined with American flags, then sweeps past Betsy into Brody's office.
Congressman.
Wait, who are you?
I'm a constituent of some urgent business.
Sir.
It's okay. You should go home, Betsy. It's late.
Did you know?
What?
Did you know?
Know what? What are you talking about?
I have got 7 casualties in Gettysburg.
Slow down.
Did you know that was going to happen?
How could I have?
Just answer the question. Have you been lying to me? When you talked to Roya.
You made me
you
do that.
You told her something. You must have.
No.
Don't you lie to me.
Carrie.
Don't you touch me. Don't you fucking dare.
I didn't lie to you. I don't know anything about any of that. I don't know what you're saying.
Her tearful face crumples.
Really?
He reaches out and gently takes her by the hand. He clasps her hand between both of his, then draws her into his embrace. Over her shoulder, his face remains unreadable in the shadows.